The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com. Our first article, Six Life Lessons I've Learned from Reading The Great Gatsby. And this article was written by Maria Anna Meredis. A classic, perhaps the supreme American novel, Sunday Times. More than an American classic, it's become a defining document of the national psyche, a creation myth, the Rosetta Stone of the American dream, Guardian. F. Scott Fitzgerald was better than he knew, for in fact, and in the literary sense, he invented a generation. New York Times. An unquiet masterpiece whose mystery never fails to exert its power. Robert McCrum, Observer, The 100 Best Novels in English. In reading The Great Gatsby for the first time, I couldn't see how what I heard was a mere 1920s romance could be the masterpiece these reviews presented it to be. Yet, after reading it, I realized that it was even more. A timeless masterpiece. Although set in a specific period, the ideas and criticism Fitzgerald conveys can take immediate effect in every era. The ingeniousness of this novel has given me life lessons that I carry with me at every turn. Here is a list of six lessons I have learned from reading The Great Gatsby. 1. Reserve all judgments. Right from the opening of the novel, Fitzgerald conveys an important piece of advice to the reader. The novel opens as Nick, the narrator, shares something his father had once told him. Whenever you feel like criticizing anyone, just remember that all the people in the world haven't had the advantages that you've had. In making this remark, Fitzgerald instills a consciousness in the reader's mind to be cautious before judging, as one can never judge objectively. Just by this opening, we are awakened, one may even say called out, on the unfair judgment of society, a problem that has most irrefutably been transpired in our times. 2. Money can't buy happiness. Throughout The Great Gatsby, the stark contrast between appearances and reality is incessantly illustrated. Between Daisy, Tom, Jordan, and Gatsby, we are exposed to these characters that attain excessive wealth. Yet, none of them is truly happy. With the exception of Gatsby, these characters are restless creatures purposely roaming through life. These people appear to have everything. In reality, they have nothing. Wealth, a mask concealing the ugly truth. Tom's affairs, his violent tendencies, Daisy's unhappiness in her marriage, her indifference to her child. And Gatsby, the wealthiest of them, the unhappiest of them all. Behind the lavish parties, the opulent lifestyle, the palatial mansion, hides a disconsolate soul, having given everything for something he may never have. And ultimately, Gatsby's money couldn't buy Daisy's love or society's acceptance. Despite the extravagant parties and thousands of guests, two people attend his funeral, and those two people were the ones he did not try to buy. Excerpt. I couldn't forgive him or like him, but I saw that what he had done was, to him, entirely justified. It was all very careless and confused. They were careless people, Tom and Daisy. They smashed up things and creatures and then retreated back into their money, or their vast carelessness, or whatever it was that kept them together and let other people clean up the mess they had made. 3. Not everything is what it appears to be. The fine line between reality and illusion has misled people throughout the history of mankind. Accordingly, Fitzgerald uses each character of the novel as a literary device, serving to the illustration of the contrast of appearances and reality. Who thought such unhappiness could hide behind such wealth? This novel serves as an indication of the subjectivity of truth, of reality. Nothing is really what it seems, as perfect as it may appear to be. 4. Find purpose in your life. The perpetual restlessness of human beings is a major aspect of human nature explored in The Great Gatsby. Between Daisy, Tom, and Jordan, these characters do not know what the word want means. Money is possession, and with that, life is lived aimlessly. And in the words of Nick, the man who gives his name to this book, namely Gatsby protrudes from the rest. He does indeed have a purpose, to attain Daisy's love, and up to his last breath, every move, every action, all serve to that very purpose. Some may disagree with what his purpose is, but his intentions are pure and his diligence is irrefutable. And that is why Gatsby is admirable. His sense of purpose, his aim in life, his extraordinary gift for hope. This is the story of The Great Gatsby, a story of hope, a story of purpose. And in focusing his novel on a character so fixated on his purpose, Fitzgerald in turn nudges the reader to acquire a sense of purpose similar to Gatsby's. 5. Live in the moment. From symbolism upon metaphor upon figurative devices, Fitzgerald paints it unequivocal that Gatsby is stuck in time. Both Gatsby's downfall and demise stem from a distinctive attribute of his, consistent throughout the novel, his inability to accept the passage of time. Excerpt. Can't repeat the past? Why, of course you can. No matter the obstacles that impede on his plan, Gatsby, in his head, explicates them to abide by his dream. He disregards that Daisy now has a child. He wants to erase her years with Tom. In this journey of attaining his American dream, Gatsby fights against a natural force, the passage of time. And as much as he fights for Daisy, he can never have her. Because he does not want the Daisy that exists in front of him. He is fixated on that Daisy from years ago, who now only subsides in his own consciousness. 6. Hope is a noble yet futile trait. Throughout the novel, the fine line between the nobility and futility of hope is excessively explored. Excerpt. If personality is an unbroken series of successful gestures, then there was something gorgeous about him, some heightened sensitivity to the promises of life. Gatsby had an extraordinary gift for hope, a romantic readiness such as I have never found in any other person, and which it is not likely I shall ever find again. On the one hand, one cannot overlook the lying, scheming, the criminal activity, the lengths to which Gatsby goes in the name of hope, and all for nothing. In spite of his unwearied attempts, his inordinate rigor, and extraordinary hope, in the end, Gatsby died alone, and the person he prized the most was essentially at fault for his death. Yet, on the other hand, as perfectly stated by Nick, Gatsby turned out all right in the end. Because Gatsby died nobly, fighting for his, although questionable, passion, and even to his dying breath, he upheld his hope, his extraordinary gift. And our next article, this classic novel that you've probably read is rubbish. And this op-ed article was written by Jamil Duncan. The Great Gatsby is the second most common book taught to 11th grade students, according to the English Teacher's Companion. Those who support the novel's number 2 reign do so because the book is about disliking the wealthy and the American dream. It captures money's power to corrupt, to let the rich escape from the consequences of their actions. As Clifton Spargo put it, those are good reasons to recommend The Great Gatsby to friends and colleagues, but those are not reasons for it to be taught in school. People are entitled to their own opinions. So, It is okay to loathe the American dream and the wealthy, but that shouldn't be fed to students. Schools should teach their pupils how to think. Schools should not be telling students what to think through the analogs of a book. I believe the latter is being done, and that The Great Gatsby, among others, has been the vehicle for it. The purpose of this article is to give you a different view, a view that your teachers likely have not given you. If you haven't read it or don't recall what it's about, here's some background. The author of The Great Gatsby, Francis Fitzgerald, viewed the American dream as a greed-driven ambition. In his view, the dream elicits immoral conduct, unhappiness, and disappointment. Fitzgerald used the main character Jay Gatsby's dream to analogize that view. His dream was a girl. Gatsby met Daisy while he was stationed near her home. They began dating, but Gatsby had to go join the military in a war. At some point, he was supposed to return home, but he ended up in Oxford instead. After being apart for so long, Daisy no longer had it in her to remain faithful to Gatsby. So, she moved on and married Tom Buchanan. From then on, he decided to make it his life's mission to win her back and erase Tom from her life. That became his dream. Gatsby amassed wealth, allegedly through nefarious channels, to impress Daisy. And at every chance he got, Gatsby flaunted his money. He threw extravagant parties where he permitted uninvited strangers to enter his home. And, on one occasion, he even gave Daisy a tour of his wardrobe. This show of wealth was so impressive that it reduced Daisy to tears. But none of it was enough to upend her life with Tom. When Tom confronted Gatsby about his infatuation with Daisy, Gatsby responded by saying that Daisy didn't love Tom. The two gentlemen argued about whether she did, and when pressed on it, Daisy struggled to answer. After years building wealth and buying lavish properties to woo her, Gatsby still couldn't win her over. It was impossible, namely because she and Tom had a child, and children don't just go away. On top of that disappointment, Gatsby's thirst for Daisy, his dream, is what got him killed. Daisy was driving the car that killed Myrtle Wilson, George Wilson's wife. George was told that Gatsby owned the car, so George killed Gatsby, not knowing that Gatsby wasn't driving it. But Daisy wouldn't have been driving Gatsby's car if Gatsby weren't dead set, no pun intended, on wooing her. In short, in working to attain his American dream, Gatsby made money unethically, spent most of his time trying to impress Daisy, to no avail, and got killed because of it. If it is true that the cynical view of the American dream is what Fitzgerald wanted the reader to take away from his book, then Fitzgerald was a narrow-sighted man. That dream doesn't reflect all of our dreams. The American dream is subjective. Getting rich to win over a girl, which is what Gatsby did, is not everyone's goal. Therefore, this book is not a reasonable reflection of the American dream. It is only a reflection of individual stupidity. Individuals can be foolish in choosing what they aspire, but that has nothing to do with the act of aspiring or goal setting, which is all the American dream is about. It is the freedom for everyone to reach their goals if they work hard to get them. Contrary to popular belief, and Fitzgerald's too, it was not a dream of individual wealth at the time the book was written. It's because we aren't as greedy as you think. In today's America, that may be more true given the increased obsession with the middle class. Politicians feverishly court the middle class's vote. Economists reel over their financial stability. And this new generation of progressives are consumed by the middle class's diversity or lack thereof. But let's assume I'm wrong. If in the 1920s, when this book was written, the American dream was about material possessions and wealth, one would expect the American dream to still be about those things. Our economy is in better shape than it was in the 20s, and Americans have wider access to new and luxurious goods. We have more reasons to be greedy today than people did in the 20s, but that's not what has happened. Today, for the second time in just 60 years, Americans have become focused on a progressive endeavor toward racial harmony and economic equality. That doesn't live with the narrative of big, bad, avaricious Americans that only care about money. In fact, the big, bad, avaricious Americans Fitzgerald was talking about are among the top percent of earners, which he may have been part of. Regular people can't afford to attend or host a Gatsby-like party. Only rich people can, and rich people are not a dime a dozen. So if anything, the critiques of this book are only applicable to the minutiae of Americans. That is more reason to dismiss the notion that The Great Gatsby is a legitimate critique of the American dream. The author's gripe only applies to the few. In writing The Great Gatsby, Fitzgerald penned an analogous critique of the American dream, but his critique only applies to rich people, a narrow portion of the American population. That is true today, and it was true when he wrote the book, for there was never a time when a supermajority of Americans was rich. After reading this book, one would think it was the opposite, that all Americans want or live a Gatsby-esque life. As was explained, that is incorrect. It is a pity that a book laden with such a misguided sentiment is being taught in our schools. And our last article today, a great social media reputation is as easy as 1, 2, 3. And this article was written by Kiamisha Denise Sims. Carpe diem means experiencing everything as if it's your last day. All eyes are, or seem like, they are on you, like a bright spotlight. I understand why that scenario creates anxieties at first. These worries are troubling and are not everlasting. An example of embracing creativity, new opportunities, and knowledge is social media. What is social media? The definition is interactive technologies that allow the creation or sharing/exchange of information, ideas, career interests, and other forms of expression via virtual communities and networks. We know the definition of social media, but what are examples? How do we use it and make it more personal? In this article, I will give you some advice to find the answers for yourself. Here are plenty of examples, but I will use Twitter as a personal example and Instagram as a promoting example. Examples of social media. Twitter is a website and app that was made in 2006 and has only improved through the years. It may not be the most current example, but teens and young adults use Twitter. The app and website is a microblogging website and app. How can we interact with Twitter? This app and website is basically a personalized blog online. Using this website, like many others, requires rules that you have to follow. Respecting the content of others, using appropriate language and interactions, and using tweets within 280 characters. I'm aware that 280 characters are not enough to say everything you want to. A solution to this is adding another tweet to the original. A hashtag, the max is 15, brings people into a conversation. This simple interaction creates traffic where people see what you say, or vice versa. Traffic is a wise idea if handled well. Note, be careful of using hashtags unrelated to anything that is not related to your statement or a topic that is considered spam. Of course, getting followers and having everyone see that you are great, but sometimes the numbers can get to your head. We all want to be seen. If this has happened to you or others, don't be too hard on yourself or them. It happens to everyone and is so relatable. How can you interact with others besides using a hashtag? You can add colors or an animated picture, like a GIF, to your tweet to develop more liveliness. The sky is the limit. But what does this have to do with Instagram? Instagram is another app and website you can use for social media. Instagram is an American photo and video sharing social networking service created by Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger in April 2012. You can use it as a creative to share your life, thoughts, and creations. As great as creativity is, we also need knowledge regarding using these platforms. You don't need a class, although I highly recommend it, like HubSpot, because it is free and self-paced. But that choice is up to you. Sometimes you need someone to guide you. Sometimes you need some good old trial and error to get clarity. I will give you some advice to get this clarity and send you on your way to creating something true for you online. 1. What are your reasons behind making a name for yourself online? Is it to express yourself? To join a community or two? To promote a product? You need to figure this out before anything else. Trust me, it would make it so much more focused, enjoyable, and cause less stress. If you are drawn to more than one thing, try them all out. If this includes research, that's okay. An example of this is personal to me. I wanted some type of connection. I am very introverted and struggle to communicate confidently. I found an outlet to do this, writing. I started at age 10 with short stories. I read those back, and they were definitely cringe-worthy fan fiction. This is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. If I give hope to someone through my writing, then I am a happy camper. 2. Once you have figured out why you want to join social media, you can start experimenting. I joined groups online to find writers I could connect with. I use authors to learn from their mistakes and their victories, so I would have some idea what to do because back then, I had no idea. I joined Facebook, Twitter, and eventually Instagram, where I have so much support as a writer and self-published author. 3. Use an eye-catching, transparent, and appropriate photo and create a stellar bio. These things are so important. These are the first things people will see, so make it count. Use sentences and be authentic. Why is this important? Using this strategy, people are aware of what your page is about, the content, and it helps them decide if they want to interact with you. An example of a bad bio is from my personal Facebook page. A girl who likes reading and writing, loves her dogs. Sure, you know I like these things. Considering that I'm an author on Facebook, it gives you no clues about what I write, which is a problem if I want to sell books. A better example would be this. I am an author who scribes short stories for adults and young adults. Or if you want to be more specific, I am an African-American female author with anxiety, depression, and cerebral palsy. I want to spread hope, pure love, and courage through my stories. Do you see the difference? One is more specific and clear, while the other isn't. 4. If you need content, using what you have can be a good strategy. For photos and videos, you can use natural light and your phone's camera to get them. For editing and creating posts and videos, for example, you can use apps such as Canva. 5. Be present. Go back to step number 2 and 3. Using the communities you have joined, show them you care by commenting, sharing, mentioning, and/or following. What does this have to do with Instagram? How can you use Instagram for creativity and connection with others? As stated before, Instagram is a vivid, growing online community. There are many ways to connect with others. You can use my tips as examples. A personal and business-like Instagram example. Being part of the author community is like being in the middle of being passed a torch. If anyone is unaware of what I mean, basically, someone is holding a torch to a certain point, then they pass it over to the next person, and so on. You hopefully have learned what you like to write, your writing style, your muses, etc. If you haven't figured these important elements out, you may want to figure this out first. The author industry is wonderful, as much as it is competitive, especially because you can easily sell your books online, which is how most authors begin their career or hobby. You have to remember your answers to step number 1, and remember that when times get challenging and discouraging, because it will. You may feel like quitting, but I don't ever want anyone to quit just because something is hard temporarily. If you stick it out, you may get the results you want, but not right away. Why did I start a business online? I wanted a connection. I wanted hope despite everything around me. I wanted real friends and love. I wanted a purpose. I started at age 10 with short stories. I read those back and they were definitely cringeworthy fan fiction. Then they just got longer, deeper, soothing, healing. I was home. I decided that this was what I wanted to do for the rest of my life and to share them despite being scared like hell. If I give hope or make someone dig deep within themselves and feel safe, I am a happy camper. Sure, the numbers aren't quite there yet. And yes, I haven't been promoting as much as I should be because of anxiety, but this isn't just about me anymore. It is about my audience. I'm the type of person who likes to take the time to give it all I've got, because not only do I deserve that, my audience does too. So if that means making a newsletter and a website with an author page and slowly building confidence and skills, that is actually what I'll do, and the money will follow, eventually. I hope these tips help you. Now, go find your voice online. Have some fun experimenting. I wish you guys the best of luck. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.